All right, folks. So today we're going to be discussing one of the hot topics on social media recently. If you've been following a lot of the TV discussion, you will have seen mentions of 13 Reasons Why, and for good reasons, as we'll get into shortly. But if you're wondering why I'm the one doing the introduction here today, is because Colin, as you might imagine, is not really into the whole teen drama thing. So we decided having him on would not be the most informative thing to do, but I managed to find a suitable replacement. So Cody, can you introduce yourself and why you're here, I suppose.
I am Cody Wallace. I'm a film major and sociology major, so double major at Georgia State University. I'm a freshman. I am going to take my last final to finish up my freshman year on Monday. And I know you said that Colin wasn't really into the whole teen drama thing, but I, you know, just recently became, I turned 20, so I'm not a teen, but I'm really close to being a teen. As to where Colin, I don't know his age exactly, but I imagine it's...
Oh, he's ancient. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. So, you know, I kind of relate to at least a little bit of what they're going through. This is obviously a lot more messed up than anything I've dealt with in my life, but I can at least relate to like the tiny social tics a little bit more than Colin probably can.
Yeah, and you could give a more recent take on the whole like American high school experience, I'm guessing, as well.
Yeah, well, and my take's actually a little more skewed because I only went to public school my freshman year and my first half of sophomore year, and then I did online school after that.
Okay.
But I think from it and like observing my friends as they were going through high school, because you know a lot of the show doesn't really take place in actual high school itself. A lot of it has to do with things that happen outside of it, and I think observing them, all of my friends for a few years, probably gives me at least some sort of a unique perspective on it.
Yeah, so I put the call out for people who would be interested in coming on to talk about the show, and we had a few different responses. The reason I reached out to you was not only because you follow me on Twitter, which is a sign of good judgment and excellent taste, but also you said you were a dual film and sociology major, and I feel like those are the two angles that a lot of people are coming from the show at, and which are worth discussing in their own different contexts. So there's a lot of things to talk about, just the show as an artistic work, and then also the show as a form of social commentary, which has attracted a lot of criticism and which I a lot of counter criticism as well, and that's definitely worth getting into.
You know, I originally was just a film major, and then I just took sociology as an elective because it was always something that I was interested in, and I realized really quickly that most film is just a commentary on society, and so that's why, and I got really into my sociology class, and so I just thought it was a natural fit to do a double major in that because I was so interested in sociology that, you know, I thought about minoring in it, but then I was like, I want the full sociology experience, kind of. But you know, this show in particular, it has like, I guess, a stronger connection to society than a lot of the shows you'll watch in modern day, just because of like all of the problems in society. I feel like it does try to comment on almost every single one of like the major problems with teen society, at least at some point throughout the show, whether it's, you know, rape, suicide, depression, dealing with the loss of a friend, drunk driving, dealing with your parents. It touches on essentially every single aspect of society with teens. So it was really the perfect show for me, which is probably why I was so enthralled by it.
And there are lots of shows and films where you can sit back and turn off and not really have to engage those critical faculties. But I think a lot of the more highly regarded shows and shows that stand the test of time are the ones that do involve some form of social commentary. And this show in particular is explicitly about various social themes, and it's impossible to just not take a stance on the issues that the show is bringing up.
Oh yeah, absolutely. And what you'll find is like film and TV, it really is like a time capsule for society in that moment. And that, as I was watching it, it was so obvious to me of just, you know, 20 years from now, if I have kids, they're going to watch this show and I'll be able to just point to it and be like, yeah, you know, these were the problems that were going on at the time.
And the show, I think, for both camps is timeless in a sense that there are lots of people saying that this is the perfect show that encapsulates a lot of important ideas about modern society that a lot of kids, especially the age that the high schoolers on the show absolutely need to watch. And then you have the other side saying that this show is a cautionary tale for how not to depict these topics. And this is, you know, when we're educating future like mental health professionals and teachers and so on, this will be an example of what not to do. So either way, the show has acquired a level of infamy, if you like, that will, I think, keep it in the discussion for a long time to come.
Yeah, absolutely. Just my Twitter feed in general is just people not screaming back and forth at each other because they're not mentioning each other, but just watching the same scene, seeing the same things, and coming to two completely different conclusions on what it did. I guess we're both in like the more positive camp, not to spoil anything, but the negative camp definitely exists. It is very strong.
Yeah. So watching the show for the first time, I thought it was like a good and nuanced and balanced portrayal of a lot of these issues, but I wasn't overly enthusiastic about it, the way I'm not really overly enthusiastic about anything. But then when I read a lot of the criticism and the pushback against the show, my reaction against that criticism was so strong that now I almost felt obliged to defend the show against what I see as just this totally balmy backlash towards it.
Yeah, I think when I was watching it, a lot of the conclusions the show was coming to just felt kind of just so natural to me that I didn't react one way or the other. And it really was going online and seeing the backlash that made me look at it and was like, no, I think they actually did a really good job with that particular thing. Now, in terms of the suicide aspect of things, I do understand the people that are coming at it from that camp of don't depict violent suicide and all the ways that, maybe they're saying it might glorify it. I can see all of those things. And if someone out there is inspired by this show to commit suicide and leave 13 tapes behind to people, that's obviously a bad thing. But, from my perspective, pretty much everything else they did from a sociological point of view, I didn't really get the problematic view on those things.
Yeah, and we'll definitely return to that in due course. It's tough to know where to really start diving into this because one aspect of the show is that I think it's not the thing which really lends itself well to like an episode by episode recap. If you were doing this week by week, I think you would have to make it a very different show, first of all, but I also think the reaction would be very different. It's a show which, as most Netflix shows are nowadays, I think is designed for binging. You see from people who get into the show, they never want to just like take a break after two or three episodes. It's always, I've watched one and now it's hooked me in and I'm going to continue watching until I fall asleep or have to, leave for work or something. And it's a show that really lends itself to that. And I think the subject matter ties into that too, where you're getting to see someone's spiral down into the lowest of the low in real time. And it's hard to really find a natural place to put a stop in that, right?
Well, yeah, and just from I've seen this pointed out in a lot of different places. I didn't really come to it on my own, but the basic show setup in itself is kind of like a commentary on Netflix binging, and everybody gets these tapes and they all talk about how they listen to them all in one night, and then so they're binging the tapes literally, and then Joy is like, me personally, I really don't binge shows. I'll watch, one a day and then take a day to think about it, kind of like Clay did. So I in a way that was a big reason why I related to Clay. But yeah, I mean, it definitely is a commentary on just how we take media in a weird way.
And if you want to be cynical, I suppose you could extend that to say that the show is subtly firing shots at Clay and all of those people who watch the show in a more like relaxed pace to say just hurry up, get on with it, listen to your tape, watch our show and really embrace it. But I think it is, in a way, it almost mirrors the kind of mental state that a lot of the characters find themselves in, where they can't really detach themselves from the situation. It's always at the forefront of their minds, and it's not something that they can ever really escape from, and they have to follow it to its natural conclusion, the way that, this isn't a show which you're going to give up on after 7 or 8 episodes, really. You might, if you're someone who does not want to see a lot of the more graphic stuff towards the end, and you've been warned about that in advance, then fair enough, you can move away. But other than that, I haven't seen people who have taken the plunge and then just bailed at somebody. It's always, I've watched 2 or 3 episodes and I didn't like it, it's not for me, or I watched 12 episodes in 2 days and now I really want to talk about it with anyone.
Oh yeah, I mean, it's a polarizing show in that way, and it's like, you either love it and you can't look away, or you think it's a train wreck and you can't look away. And either way, you want to get to the end and find out what happens. But yeah, that was one of the things I wanted to do when you first invited me on. Was I wanted to go back and just find all the times that they told Clay to just listen to the tapes, just listen to the tapes, because it felt so much like people telling me to just go ahead and watch a show over and over again, like just go ahead and binge it and dive in. I didn't have time to do that. I got to like the first three times they told him to just listen to the tapes, specifically him and Tony in those conversations. But yeah, I mean, it definitely is just this compulsiveness that we've had, and that the characters obviously have in the show. I guess it is a little different though, because I think if I were to have a box of 13 tapes dropped on my doorstep from a girl that I was in love with and had killed herself, I probably would listen to them all in one night. But
equally, that's something which you would need to have a very personal response to. And if you met someone, yeah, who said, I can't actually handle listening to this in more than very small chunks at my own pace, you wouldn't criticize them. But like, how can you not, you know, you would understand where they were coming from. And I feel like
that is true.
So it's very easy to kind of make fun of the show for like every single episode. We have a scene of Tony saying like, dude, just get on with it, listen to your tape. But, and that feeds into wider concerns about the pacing of the show, which we'll get onto in a second. But I do think that the whole premise of the show relies on Clay taking it in this more measured way. And if he knew everything on all 13 tapes coming into episode one, well, the show would look very different, and the entire way the show was sculpted would have to be different too. But that's one thing I think we can dive into right away. It felt like, so the show is 13 Reasons Why, and there are 13 tapes, and so it stands to reason there are going to be 13 episodes. That's a very natural thing to do. I don't think that it needed to do that though, and I feel like that artificially lengthened the show and forced them to insert a lot of material, which in some cases was good and developed the story in good ways, but in other cases just felt like kind of a distraction or a red herring. And it felt like this could have been 7 or 8 Reasons Why when it all came down to it.
Yeah, well, it could either be seven or eight Reasons Why, or it could have strayed away from doing 50-minute episodes. You know, that obviously cuts down on a lot of it. And then there are episodes where you could easily see it combined, like the Jessica and Alex episode being two different episodes where they're almost the same type of the same story, just being told from two different perspectives of episode. Two is specifically about Jessica. Episode three is specifically about Alex. They could have combined that, but I do understand, like, just from a pure aesthetic purpose, when you had the show set up and you want, you know, tape one, side B is the episode title, why you wouldn't combine the two.
Right. That's the way it's set up in the book. The chapter names are tape one, side A, tape one, side B. And that's the way that the naming convention works for the TV show as well, if you look on Wikipedia or on TV Guide or anywhere. So it felt like it could have been 6 episodes with like a clean cut between the two halves in each case. And as you say, there are some episodes where there's just not really that much going on, and so you have the same 50 minutes for that as you do for the episodes where you learn so much stuff and Clay finds his entire situation changing and the whole show is upturning itself.
Yeah, well, and you know, one of the criticisms I've seen is just like the episode where Clay and Tony climb the mountain is just like that whole episode is completely unnecessary.
Yeah, and the mountain climbing scene is a perfect example of that. That's just so, like, you don't even know what it's meant to go for. There's no real symbolism to it. It just feels very like hokey and forced.
And believe me, by this point, I'd already seen the commentary online, so I was already in like stark defense mode of the show. So I was just trying to find ways of like, how can I defend this? What does this mountain symbolize? And I was like, I got nothing. And I'm a film major. Like, I still had nothing.
And a sociology major, right? You used to like compulsively overanalyzing. Yeah.
Absolutely.
So if even you are lost for words, then that's not really a good sign. In terms of like the wider structure of the show, did you have any thoughts on like how the show was structured, what the pacing was like in a more general sense, or anything like that?
Well, I mean, I do like the structure of the show. My main critique of it would be the 50-minute episodes. Like, make the episodes, and it is Netflix, right? So you can make an episode like whatever length it needs to be. Not all of them need to line up and be exactly 50 or 52 and fit in that time range. One can be 30 and the next can be 40. And that's something I think a lot of the Netflix shows should take advantage of. If you have a story in one episode that just doesn't take as much time, The uniformity is not an issue for Netflix. They can post an episode and it be like tremendously shorter and that not be an issue. But the overall structure, like, you know, from tape 1 to 13, that is the coolest way to tell the story, just from a marketing and aesthetic perspective. And you know, you have the tape and the whole intro, and it opens up with the whatever number you're on, and that's a good way to remember the characters, because they all do get their own episode. I know I was talking earlier about how the Alex and Jessica episode could have been combined into one, but that, you know, that would minimize the Alex and Jessica characters in their own right. So I do like it just from what they did to present it. And then obviously, like, the things with the lighting is spectacular, which I'm pretty sure every single person that watched the show noticed it on their own right, which is actually amazing that lighting is getting so much mainstream talk of just, you know, when they're in the present, all the lighting is dull and darker colors, and even the outfit choices are darker. And then when they flash back to the past, it's all bright colors, all bright outfits, and just, you know, a slight symbolization of everything was light when Hannah was there and everyone was happier. And then she died and everyone's questioning things and everyone's sad now that she's gone.
Yeah. And that's the kind of thing which, even if you don't notice it explicitly or right away, it definitely comes across subconsciously and has an effect on your overall viewing experience.
Oh yeah, for sure. I was talking to my friend about it and he just immediately just like, oh yeah, it definitely does do that. So and you know, just from a filming perspective, they do a lot of really, really, really good things just to toy with your emotions that you don't notice that they do, and that's probably number one.
Can you elaborate on some more of those? Because I am not a sophisticated TV viewer, so a lot of this stuff just kind of goes over my head or has to be pointed out to me by people like you. So while you're here, enlighten me on what's going on.
Well, I would like to think I'm not a sophisticated TV viewer either. I just have to do it to get a good grade in my classes.
Sure.
But yeah, just from I looked at it from an emotional standpoint of how they wanted you to feel at certain times. And there were obviously certain points where, the show brought joy. Right. So just for example, in the first episode, she's flirting with Justin and everything seems nice. It seemed just like a natural teen drama. And, you know, she's flirting with him and she does the whole thing on the bus where, you know, she runs on the bus and he goes after her and then she leaves him on the bus. And then, the whole thing where they're flirting over the phone and they dodge her mom. And then they meet at the park and they have the really romantic, the kiss or whatever. And it makes you happy. But at the same time, like, you do know the premise of the show. You do know that she killed herself. You do know that she's saying that Justin is a reason why. And you're sitting there wondering the whole time, like, what's going to go wrong, while also the show making you happy and it showing you like a lovable product. And then at the end, it just crushes you. Right. And it does that over and over and over again. That's the whole point of the show. And that is the whole, you know, symbolism over why Hannah commits suicide at the end of it, is because time and time again, her joy, like, she's just brought up to a point and you're happy for her and you're happy that she's doing well. And then just something dramatic and awful happens to her.
Yeah, and when you know that everything is building towards this incredibly dark and dramatic conclusion, even moments that don't seem like they have any relevance, or they seem like, oh, well, that's fairly insignificant, they're infused with this wider sense of dread that, how is this actually going to play into someone taking this incredibly serious choice?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. For instance, I work for my dad. And so there are a lot of times throughout the day where, I'll be like, there won't be anything to do at work and I'll just be sitting around waiting for something to pop up to do. And so every time that they were at work and they were just kind of sitting around and talking and doing nothing, I was just like, so certain that their boss was going to walk up and she was going to get fired. And that just be a reason why she was upset or something.
Yeah, I was expecting, when we see Hannah in that job at the Cressmont from very early on, I'm thinking, well, this, like everything else in the show, is going to have to go sour at some point. So whether she gets fired, whether she quits, whether her relationship with Clay becomes awkward somehow, and now they're working together and that's not going to go well, something about this is going to go wrong. And that's the attitude that I approach every new character, every new piece of information about the show with, that, like, one of these people at least is going to have some terribly important role that at the moment I'm not seeing yet.
Oh yeah, absolutely. And you know, if you really dive down into it, something did come out of her job that was bad. So, you know, she loved her job, and that's what they were trying to show the whole time. And that's why, like, I immediately thought she's going to get fired. Something bad's going to happen at this job. But in reality, it was just a poor economic situation with her parents that made her quit her job, which is, you know, almost just as depressing as her getting fired, if not more.
Right. And that was a result of a bad but very like inadvertent mistake on her part. And that's exactly the kind of thing which, if you're in that state of mind, you're going to be beating yourself up over. You're going to take as evidence that you can't do anything right, that you're worthless, that you're just a burden to other people and so on. So you can see how that which... Someone normally, like, that's a kick in the teeth that you lose that much money and so on, but you can find ways to get past it, hopefully. Like, for someone in Hannah's situation, that is just another, like, that's just another blow on top of all the blows that have come before it.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's one of the things that I've heard as a commentary. I don't think what happened to her was bad enough for her to commit suicide, which on its own right is just a complete misunderstanding of suicide and mental health. But even aside from that, I think, you know, the show does do a great job in leading you to the point of like understanding why she feels the way she does at the very least. And, you know, I can't say enough how good of a job they do of, making the viewer themselves, you're so upset that you're just understanding of the mental state she's in at almost every point.
Right, because you see this argument that Hannah is an unsympathetic character, which firstly, she's in high school and no one is a sympathetic figure when they're in high school. But then also, at that age, you're not mature enough, you don't have the life experience to have that broader perspective about things. So one incident, one mistake, which in retrospect, 10 years later, seems totally insignificant, at the time, it's so overwhelming and it feels like it matters so much more than maybe it does objectively. And that is your entire social universe. And it's very narrow and very self-contained. So one like argument in high school, one person humiliating you, that carries over to all of your other interactions in that world for years to come. And if someone's tormenting you or if there's some break in a relationship with someone, you can't really get away from that. Like you are trapped in that universe. And so it's very easy for something which, if you're like some jaded and cynical 28-year-old looking at, oh, well, that's why would anyone care about that? At the time, if you think back to when you were in that situation, hopefully you didn't go through that yourself, but like you can hopefully put yourself in her shoes and think, well, I can see why I, as Hannah Baker, would find that mortifying.
Yeah, and that's a really good point. And it leads me to like one of the things that just makes me most angry about the commentary of the show is like everyone wants to paint it, this person's a good character, this person's a bad character, you know, good guys and villains. And that is like literally what the show sets out to, in my opinion, that's what the show sets out to like just kind of trash, is that idea of absolute good and absolute evil in a show. Especially considering, you know, I think they're sophomores when most of this is going on. And so, you know, to where someone like and Hannah even has a line in the show itself, I think it's on the first episode, it's like, I know you probably didn't mean to let me down. And I think everyone needs to understand, like, pretty much every single character in the, every single person in the, of the 13, none of them really meant to let Hannah down. They're just selfish because they're children and they don't know any better. Bryce is the villain of the show. That is the only, like, true villain of the show. It paints everyone else in a morally ambiguous light. Even Clay, who, you know, is this ultimate good guy of the show, I think it's an episode two. He says something really despicable to Hannah. It's something like, sometimes it's better to wait when they're sitting at the lunchroom table. Like they're all messed up little kids. And that's the point. Like everyone's like that as a sophomore in high school.
Or like another example would be when Clay takes Courtney to Hannah's grave and he's interrogating her about, it's a 21st century. How is it so hard for you to live openly as a lesbian? And it's like, well, Clay's calling her deceptive, basically, right? And it's like,
Absolutely, yeah.
For a character who is meant to be one of the heroes of the show, who I think generally is likable and sympathetic, and you want to root for him and to get into his mindset, he is also capable of saying and doing really stupid things. And that's, as you say, that there is no real black and white in the show. The one character who I think is like universally positive and whitewashed is Jeff, who meets an untimely end. And I think if it had been anyone other than Jeff, or if Jeff had stuck around somehow, we would be saying that Jeff seems kind of out of place with the rest of the characters in the cast. But given that he's just snatched away from us, that feels oddly appropriate that the one person who is unimpeachable in that regard just doesn't make it to the end of the show.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, Jeff's death was like one of the most heartbreaking things for me in real time. I don't know why. And obviously that it's meant to be that way. Like they paint him as this such positive figure, make him seem out of place so they can kill him and be like, oh my God, he was the only good in the world or whatever.
Because right. if it's Montgomery is in a tragic car accident, well, who really cares, right? Like everyone's kind of low key happy to see him gone. But Jeff, like, it seemed like everyone loved Jeff. Like, the jocks love Jeff. Clay loves Jeff. Even the people who Jeff isn't actively friends with, he's always, like, sympathetic to and trying to, like, boost up and support. So he is the one kind of voice for good in the show. And I think it's a useful form of commentary in itself that, of course, he's not going to survive until the end. Of course, if something tragic is going to happen, it's going to happen to him.
Yeah, and I also think the Jeff character is set up in a way to where, no matter who you are, you can kind of view Jeff as like someone that you're friends with in real life, whether you are a jock, because Jeff is obviously a jock, or whether you are a nerd. Like he's just one of those guys that does get along with everyone. And so he's naturally to it. You know, I can look at someone like Bryce and I'm like, yeah, that guy's a douche. I would never be friends with him in real life. I can look at I thought the same thing when I saw Justin for the first time, and really Zach, and who is it? The newspaper reporter, Ryan. These are people that I look at and I'm like, yeah, I probably just wouldn't be friends with these people in real life. Whereas almost no matter who you are, Jeff is someone you can look at and be like, yeah, that's someone I could see myself being friends with, or that I already am friends with.
Yeah, and as you say, even the villains of the show have ambiguities, or there are complex aspects of their character where it's not so easy to tie them with that brush. Even Bryce, who unambiguously is a villain and who is just a despicable character, like, we see him be very popular and very sociable, and he is like beloved by the school, and he's very superficially charming, and so it's easy to see why people can like overlook his obvious terrible personality flaws and embrace him as a friend, or be intimidated by him, or want to earn his respect. And that's consistent with what we know of how people act in that kind of high school environment, or more generally. Like, it's not surprising that Bryce is like at the top of the social hierarchy, right? Despite being this obnoxious rapist.
Well, and another thing with Bryce and them trying to humanize him, his whole arc with Justin is that he loves Justin, and they try to humanize him, in my opinion, a little bit too much. And some of the cases, like where Justin is talking with Jessica, when they're talking about Bryce raping Jessica, and Justin sitting there and saying, when I was last semester, I didn't have any shoes, and Bryce, not only did he buy me a pair of shoes, he bought a pair of shoes and just pretended he had an extra pair. And so it does paint Bryce as like this really good friend to Justin, just in this really awkward kind of way, that as I was watching it did feel out of place. And that's one of the critiques that I saw that I actually agree with, is just why take the extra 10 seconds in this scene where Jessica is yelling at Justin over not only letting Bryce rape her, but hiding it for an entire year, semester, however long it was.
But they
really go out of their way to humanize Bryce, which is interesting at the very least.
See, I thought that line about the shoes was actually quite powerful, because it shows that I think Justin, despite his own issues around boundaries and consent, and despite his kind of general dickishness overall, he understands that Bryce has done something terrible, and yet he struggles to reconcile that with the Bryce that he knows as the one person in his life who, despite everything, has actually been kind to him. And like, he doesn't want to kind of pull the mask away and see Bryce for who he really is, even though on one level he obviously knows what's going on, and he knows that he was there and he could have done more to stop it. And even now, by protecting Bryce and not saying anything, he is enabling Bryce to continue doing what he's doing.
Yeah, I definitely get that, and that's kind of one of the areas where the film major and the sociology major like conflict inside of me, because from the film perspective, I do get that like that helps recognize Justin's struggle, but just like looking at it in a broader and how it could affect the society is like you don't want anyone watching this show and thinking this like serial rapist is good in any way, right? And you don't even want people to think it's okay to take up for him. And so like that is like I'll give leniency to the people who say that it's really socially problematic in that sense.
So that's the big question I had with regards to the suicide depiction, which we'll get onto in a bit. As an educated viewer, as a film major, as a sociology major, what do you think is the difference between just depicting something as a raw act and endorsing it or sending a message about it in some way? Because to me, I don't get the sense that the show is defending Bryce in any way, or that it endorses anything that he's doing or apologizes for him. It merely shows how within that universe people can justify heinous actions, even people who in other contexts maybe are like kind, empathetic people.
Yeah, and that is like probably the most interesting discussion that comes out of the show. But I think one of the most important things we can do is like step back and realize that it doesn't really matter what the show was trying to do. It just matters that this show is kind of out there and that people are going to view it and they are going to see it in certain ways. And that is going to, that could affect their behavior in certain ways. And so that is the perspective in which the people that are bashing it are coming from, is like, I don't care what the directors meant. I don't care what the writers meant. This is what it could do. And I think when it comes to a sense of what the directors were trying to do, I absolutely think they had pure intentions. Like, I don't think they meant to glorify suicide in any way, which is why I take up with them in general.
So this is the idea of the death of the author, right? That there was no stop sign. The author died in a tragic car accident. It's about not what the author's intent was, but how the show is interpreted by the people who consume it. And I get the logic behind that. And so when I find myself disagreeing with seemingly the vast majority of critics and educated, qualified mental health professionals and so on about the show, I do find myself wondering, like, am I the one missing the point here? But at the same time, I feel like I think there is a clear message that the show is trying to send. And then there are layers of projection that people want to attached to it that I just don't think is supported by the textual evidence that the show presents.
Yeah, for sure. But, and you know, along with the negativity, like the intentions of the writers do pour in, and you do get a lot of positive social messages out of it. And I think people kind of looked at it, they heard the reports that the psychologists and the suicide experts didn't like it, and they went in with kind of a lens of every single thing that they comment on socially has been done poorly. And I think that's just like on the most basic level, not true. Like it is patently false that every single thing the show tries to comment on socially is bad. For instance, just the overarching theme of the show and what it's trying to get across to you is you never know what someone is going through. Do not be blatantly mean to people. Don't treat people poorly. Don't be selfish, because someone you know could be on the edge and they could be reaching out for you to help. You don't know. That is like without a doubt a positive message. And I've seen people try to just bash it in just these ways, and like the way it handles rape. And I understand not showing graphic rape images on TV. I get that perspective, but the commentary it does make on rape and how we handle it is undoubtedly good. Like, if even one school changes the way that their counselor is going to handle someone, a student coming up and talking to them about rape, that's a good thing.
Yeah, or if one teenage guy feels more ready to criticize the way that he or his friends maybe are acting in that environment, then that's a positive, right? And as you say, I think that message of just, even if you don't have like this direct understanding of what someone is going through, just not assuming that you do know and trying to be kind and supportive is, as you say, the central message of the show. So there are so many examples that you can list off. So like Hannah saying to Clay, have you ever even had an issue? Which surely he has, but Hannah is not like in the right mental space to recognize that. Or when Hannah and Jessica meet Alex for the first time, and Hannah's like, oh, well, why is Alex sitting alone over there with no friends? Isn't that kind of weird? And Jess has to remind her that 5 days ago they were doing the same thing themselves. Or like when Clay is having a hard time understanding why Hannah is reacting so vehemently, and he's like, well, you've never been a girl, you've never been in that situation where you're kind of being objectified like that, so you just wouldn't understand. Tony basically sums up the entire show where he says, you really don't know what's going on in someone else's life. Even Mr. Porter, who has, as a character, comes under so much criticism, and justifiably so, I think, in many cases, he says as well, like, the school I transferred from, kids shot each other to deal with problems. Like, this whole kind of social game playing and sniping is just not something that I have that direct experience from. And if you put these kids in that situation too, they would have no idea how to handle it either. So there's just this lack of understanding that permeates almost every interaction through the show intentionally, and I think that is a central message that that needs to come across. And if you look at the reaction on social media, you see a lot of people saying, well, watching the show has inspired me to kind of try and put myself in other people's shoes. And who knows if they will in reality or how long that will last for. But the fact that it's even being brought up in that way and so vividly is unambiguously a good thing to me.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. From a perspective of what it does good for society is, like, even if you see something going on to where someone else is being mean to someone, you can then go up to the person who maybe just got yelled at or just dismissed and be like, if you see them being mistreated, you think about 13 reasons why, for whatever reason, in the back of your head, and then you were able to go up and try and be nice to that person. Like, that is undeniably a positive thing that the show's done. If it instills anything like that in even 1,000 people or 1% of the people who watch the show who didn't just watch it like a drama and root for their favorite characters and, you know, go and make Twitter fan pages for Courtney, who's randomly their favorite character.
Yeah, and I feel like, almost ironically, that's a message that people have dramatically failed to internalize when it comes to Hannah, who's like the main protagonist of the show. So coming back to this question of whether Hannah is sympathetic or likable, even beyond the fact that she's in high school and she's going through all of these traumatic experiences, like, she is someone who is depressed and having suicidal thoughts. She is not going to be acting in a way that seems entirely rational to you as an observer who maybe isn't going through those things yourself. And you're not meant to think that someone in that situation is always going to be acting in a way that you find easy to cope with or that you find likable. And I think if the show did present Hannah in a more, like, composed and measured way, it wouldn't be doing justice to why she did what she did. It would kind of be undermining its own message.
Oh, yeah. Well, and, you know, if Hannah was just this completely calm and collected human being who took everything in stride, no matter how bad it was, then the show wouldn't make sense. Like, her committing suicide at the end wouldn't make sense if she was just making, like, calm and collected decisions at every single point. And that also undermines, like, her being a sophomore in high school, which I think a lot of people forget. It's just, you know, she is 16. She can barely drive. Of course, she's not going to be able to understand how to handle a situation where she's drunk at a party for, you know, assuming one of the first times in her life. And then she just hears someone being raped on a bed right outside of the door. Like, people are saying, like, oh, I would have burst out, I would have stopped it. And it's like, you don't know what you would have done.
You have no clue, right?
You've never been in that situation.
Exactly. And maybe this is just a hot take on my part. I almost feel like Hannah was too likable for the show to be that challenging. So if it had been someone more like Sky, who, like, outwardly is quite hostile to people and it takes a while to understand where she's coming from, I think the show would have been less relatable to its core audience, and so it would have been worse in that regard. But maybe it would have been better just in terms of the loyalty to its message of, like, even if you don't like someone, even if you don't understand them, it doesn't matter. They're still a human who deserves a basic level of empathy and kindness.
Yeah, and I do think of it, as weird as, like, the Sky character can be at time, I do think that's a good reason of why that character is in there, is because, you know, you have Hannah, who is the really likable person, and so it is much more easy to feel sorry for her. But then they also insert Sky at certain points to make you say, well, okay, well, we've got you to admit that what's going on with Hannah is wrong. Now, you should also admit that what's going on with Sky should make you feel bad, and you should also want to take up for her. And that, you know, you kind of come to that realization with Clay, that use his him as like your perspective.
Yeah. So let's get into the kind of deeper questions that people have had about the show then, because the thing that brought this up, and there have been lots of think pieces, there have been lots of like posts on anywhere that people have been discussing this, whether it's Reddit, Twitter, there's a lot of debate about whether the show portrays its core issues responsibly, and just what the show's message actually is. And the thing that spurred a lot of debate recently was the New Zealand Film Classification Board issued its own category for this show specifically, that bans under 18s from watching it without adult supervision. It's come up in the context of New Zealand because they have the highest teenage suicide rate in the OECD. It's, correct me if I'm wrong on this, but I think their film culture in general is more censorious with how the board operates and so on. So it's not entirely surprising. But it has, you know, this is like the most concrete example of when people have spoken out about this and actually taken steps against it, more so than just fulminating in some like article on The Guardian or something.
I actually hadn't heard about that. That's pretty interesting. And, you know, I think you said it on Twitter was the first time I noticed you say something about it, was that, you know, people, if you are depressed and if you do have like a suicidal past, it's probably not the best thing to watch the show. Like, especially certain scenes of it, like, do not watch the scene of Hannah in the bathtub. Like, if you have a history of suicidal thoughts, like, don't do it. There are definitely certain aspects of the show that you should avoid. And obviously there's no way to implement, well, kids can watch episodes this through this without parental supervision. And then episode 13 there, or 12, I guess it happens, and you're not allowed to watch it by yourself. As far as banning it, it's kind of hard to tell and to comment on, because like, I'm not someone from New Zealand. I don't really know how the culture is there. And, you know, if they do have the highest teen suicide rate, I can definitely understand the perspective of parents don't want their kids watching it. Because if I had a kid who I thought could in any way be suicidal, I probably wouldn't want them watching it either.
Yeah, so I think the core of the debate is whether someone watching this is going to be inspired in some way, or the accusation is basically that the show glorifies suicide, or that it makes it more acceptable in a way that people might latch onto if they're in that state of mind. My general response to that is, it feels like people are trying to make the show this universal parable about suicide. Hannah's situation is meant to be taken as representative of anyone who's in that spot, and if that was the case, then yeah, the show would be very incomplete, and I think it would be irresponsible to portray parts of it in the way that it did. But I feel like that universalization is then projecting things onto the show that aren't there, and which the show explicitly is not trying to endorse. Like, the show is a story of why this fictional character, Hannah Baker, this teenage girl in this high school environment, felt the need to take her own life. It's not meant as a general explanation for why for suicide overall, or as a instruction manual, or as any kind of endorsement for anything. And so what's your take on that, first of all? Because I could go on about this at length, and I'm sure I will, but I want to let you have the floor for a second.
In general, I think people on almost every issue probably jump way too far to each side on an issue. And I think it's kind of important for all of us and all of our situations to kind of slow down and realize, like, two things can be right at the same time. It can be, like, obviously the show was well done from a film perspective. I would absolutely give a thumbs up or five stars or whatever you want to call it. And I absolutely think that their intentions were 100%. They were 100% well intended, but you can also say that, like, you can imagine a situation where a boy, anyone sees this, and it does inspire them in some way. People draw inspiration from the most ridiculous places. And for a suicidal teen, drawing inspiration from a teenage show about suicide isn't that far of a logical leap.
It isn't. And so it feels to me like a lot of that is people who are not in that situation and have not been in that situation kind of assuming what someone in that situation would be thinking, and again treating that as if it's a universal inevitable thing, when, as you say, like, people respond to different forms of media, to to events in so many different ways that trying to like give some hard and fast rule is just not accurate and also not fair to the people who are in that situation themselves.
Definitely. And like, you know, we also need to look at it just from the suicide perspective. Two things can be right at the same time. It can be a negative effect for people who are suicidal and watching it. But you know, go and read the Reddit page, and the commentary on there. It's somewhat anecdotal, of course, but there's just, several people on there that are talking about how this show inspired them and, said that, you know, they don't want to end up like this, or they don't want, their story to be in the hands of 13 tapes and they want to tell their story through their own life and their own actions. And, there's definitely a way that this show can, you can go into it suicidal and come out of it, inspired, to keep living, or, inspired just to be a better person in general. Like the show can definitely look at the show and take the worst possible message from it. But at least to me, it seems like what you're saying is right. Like people who aren't going through it are talking about how it could be bad, but then all the people that are going through it are saying, well, actually it's pretty inspiring to me.
Yeah. In fairness, there have been some who have attempted suicide in the past or who are going through depression who have said, this was too hard for me to watch, and I don't think that it really did justice to what I'm feeling. And that's a perfectly valid perspective, and I don't want to take anything away from those people, because, as I say, this is not something which you can give universal principles about. And what worries me is that it seems like it's very unique to suicide, this reaction that people have, because the show deals with sexual assault in what I think is a very responsible way, but there has been some criticism of it as well. But within that criticism, nobody seems to be saying that the show is giving a broad perspective on what factors encourage sexual assault, what it's like for people who go through it, and so on. That criticism only gets made in the context of suicide, which I would argue is the least universalizable topic that is possible to talk about, right? You very rarely have a reliable first person account on what those people are going through, and you never have a reliable third person account either, because it's so hard for someone who has never been in that situation themselves to even try to put themselves in that mindset. You can, like, that approach of trying to have empathy and trying to put yourself in someone else's shoes just really doesn't work in that case, because if you have never questioned that fundamental desire to live, then you can't, like, construct that from the ground up. You can't try and think about what it would be like to not have that.
Yeah, definitely. And it kind of feels like just the people that are commenting on it and saying, like, don't show it, don't watch it, Netflix shouldn't have even put it up. It does seem like they're coming at it from the perspective of we don't necessarily know. Or it at least feels like they're coming to the perspective of, we don't know what's going to help, we don't know what's going to hurt, so just don't show anything. And I'm not even necessarily sure that that's the best approach, is if someone is feeling suicidal and there's absolutely no representation in TV and film about suicide. Like, I don't know that that's much better than even maybe 13 Reasons Why, which may be a little problematic in its depiction of suicide. Maybe it's not problematic, but maybe just it being depicted in some way, especially like a major TV show like this, maybe just suicide being the main focus of what's probably been the most popular TV show of 2017. Maybe just simply that, and bringing suicide into the light, during a time where there's a lot of other things people are talking about in front of it. Maybe that's just a good thing.
Exactly. And when we talk about the importance of representation on TV and seeing people who have gone through the same struggles as you, and having that be aired in this open setting where it's encouraging dialogue and encouraging people to think about it for the first time, maybe for suicide in particular, which still has a massive social stigma around it, which is still a taboo topic, as alluded to in the show. Like, you see people who just, like, in Mrs. Bradley's class, they don't want to talk about it, or you see Hannah's parents say that people aren't coming to their store anymore because they don't want to look them in the face and have to confront the issue, even indirectly. And for someone who is going through that experience, just seeing the topic discussed in a way which is, I think, mature and responsible can be so helpful in encouraging them to come to terms with that.
Oh yeah, absolutely. And just going back to the way that where some people say that they glorify Hannah's suicide, and that it can be glorified. Well, I mean, I think the show does does a pretty good job, even like I said earlier, just basically with the lighting, to show that, like, nothing good came from Hannah's suicide, like, whatsoever. There's not like a moral good that Hannah's suicide brought to the community. So those who say it's glorifying it, it is kind of a strange thing, because, you know, it paints Hannah's death as like the end of everybody else, and it has just brought so much turmoil, and everyone is like, either even if it is from a selfish perspective, everybody is worse off from Hannah dying.
Yeah, that's one of those criticisms where I literally don't understand where it's coming from. Some of the others, you can see why people think that, and you can engage with it on that level. When they say that it's glorifying suicide, like, how? Why? It's so, I think you see it from a few different angles. So the first is that it's often advised by suicide prevention organizations that deal with the media to not show like tributes. So that scene that we see at the start of the first episode of Hannah's locker surrounded by all the flowers and cards and everything, that is not something that you want, because it encourages people to think that in death people will like them or remember them fondly and so on. But it's immediately shown just how superficial that is in the context of the show. So you those girls who don't know Hannah taking selfies with it as the background so they can cash in on that that moment. And then when
hashtag never forget.
Right. And then when Hannah's mother is shown it by Courtney, she instantly points out, like, anyone who knew Hannah would not have left roses for her because she hated them. And it shows that just how shallow these symbols and these tokens are. And then when you see in the classroom setting, there's that guy in Mrs. Bradley's class who just says, it's been a week, can we all just get over it? And it feels like he is speaking for a lot of the high school population there. And the people who knew Hannah more closely, most of them seem to have turned against her in her death. So, like, are Courtney and Jess remembering Hannah fondly? You know, it's the people who are most hurt by this are her parents and Clay, who are the people who have always been good to her, and her tormentors, like Bryce. Okay, it feels like by the end of the show, Bryce is going to get his comeuppance in the legal sense, but Bryce has no remorse. Bryce has no regret about what he's done. He's not feeling torn up inside that Hannah's gone now. So this idea that it portrays suicide as some kind of like way to get revenge, or that it shows it as a pleasant thing. Like, we see the incredibly graphic scene of Hannah killing herself, which, with the method that they show, actually the one valid criticism is they don't show just how messy and hard that can be. Like, it's not just a matter of cutting a vein or something. It's a lot more complicated than that. But they show her screaming in agony as she does it, and then being found by her parents, who instantly realize what's going on and are just devastated. You can see, and it's fantastic acting by the two actors, you can see their lives are just over at that point. Like, nothing is ever going to be the same again. And that shows the effect that it has on people. And I feel like if it had been less graphic, if you don't see Hannah lying in the bloody bathtub, if you don't see her parents finding her, you wouldn't see just how devastating the whole thing can be.
Yeah, and I think, you know, I definitely get where you're coming from, and that's the way I felt while watching the show. And that's why, like, you know, when I logged online and saw the criticism of it, it feels like just confusing at first. But from the point they're coming at it is, if someone watches this show and doesn't pay that close of attention to it, and they're just kind of like, oh, who's the tape about this time? Oh, what did they do? And they don't, like, and they see the memorial, and then they see the girls take the picture, and they just don't even think about what that does. And then they hear that, like, Hannah's mom says the thing about the roses, and they're just like, oh, wow, Hannah's mom's a bitch or whatever. Then, you know, they aren't going to get the fact that that wasn't glorifying. And I guess the what I'm trying to get at is, like, if you don't understand that they're not trying to glorify it, if you don't pay close enough of attention to it, you could be mistaken and realize it. But that's a problematic criticism in and of itself, because you're literally also saying that they're watching the show wrong. And so you can watch almost any show wrong and take an awful message out of it and put it back into the world. I think this show in particular has gotten so much commentary because it is so blatantly about suicide that everyone went and watched it just for the message that it was going to send about a very particular issue. Whereas if, you know, a show like Game of Thrones makes a much more rash and awful depiction of suicide, no one's really going to talk about it because it's Game of Thrones. It's not something that is specifically about suicide.
Right. When Tommen jumps out of the window, you didn't have a barrage of think pieces the next day about how problematic Game of Thrones is. And Game of Thrones is problematic in a lot of ways. Like, if you want to make that argument, there's ample material out there.
Oh, yeah.
But, right. And because I feel like that also diminishes the complexity of 13 Reasons Why, which is a show about suicide, but it's also a show about sexual assault and sexism and life in that high school environment and about empathy more broadly. And there are so many different layers to it that reducing it to an inaccurate perception of its view on suicide is just really just not do the show justice. And I feel like in the broad sweep of the media more generally, it is very hard to find a full and perceptive and responsible treatment of suicide anywhere, and especially not generally in teen drama, which is marketed at the audience which often most needs to hear that message. And if you're also looking for a show which does that without being open to misinterpretation, then you're never going to find that.
No, and I think that comes back to the point earlier. I think a lot of people just don't want anyone to comment on suicide because it is a super, super hard thing to comment on. And I give the showrunner and the director and the writers credit because they obviously set out to portray it in the most in the best way that they could. And I think in a lot of ways they did do that. And people just need to understand that a little bit better when they're like coming at the showrunners personally, because being destructive and like tweeting at the actors and actresses, which I've seen, of just like how awful they were in the show and how terrible of influences they are and whatever, like that kind of stuff is destructive in its own right. I don't even think that really needs to be said here, but just understanding what the show was trying to do, it does help a lot in understanding like how we should view it. Because like I said earlier, it's just like if you're counting on people watching the show wrong, that's just like a destructive way to look at any show.
And I think ironically a lot of the criticism of the way the show handles suicide ignores Alex's suicide, just like the characters in the show did, just like everyone else does. Like Alex's suicide is treated very differently. It's something which no one really sees coming, and the viewers certainly don't see coming too. And on a rewatch, I was consciously looking for the signs that were hinting towards this. And there's the usual editorial foreshadowing. There are comments like, when Alex is arguing with this other band member in like episode 2 or something, he makes some throwaway comment and the other guy says, or if you're suicidal. And like, you get stuff like that peppered throughout the show. But you also see in the way that Alex kind of degenerates mentally over the course of the 13 episodes that like the signs are there, and the signs that you are always told to look for are there too. So, Alex gives up his place in the jazz band because he's not enjoying it anymore. He has that episode in the pool where he's just kind of out of it totally. He's making explicit references to killing himself, and he talks about, we all killed Hannah Baker, it's too bad no one paid attention before, which in retrospect, in the context of Alex, looks like a massive warning sign, right? So, if you see this just as a show about Alex, I think a lot of those criticisms die down, and yet everyone is forgetting that in their kind of uproar over the way the show handles Hannah.
Yeah, well, and just to touch on the Alex thing, that was probably my favorite thing that the show did overall, because the show is set up in a way to where you're looking at these people and they're telling you this story about Hannah, and you're just kind of like, why couldn't you guys see the signs? Why couldn't you see that, like, of course, if all these things were happening to her, of course she was going to be suicidal at some point. Of course she was going to be depressed at some point when, she loses all of her friends and just all of this other blatantly awful things happen to her with the, the slut shaming at school, et cetera. And then simultaneously, it's showing you this Alex character and you're not realizing it with him. And so the show is a lot about, nobody realized, why didn't you guys realize, why didn't you save me? And then the audience is forced to be put into that situation in the last episode where it looks like Alex did the same thing and you didn't notice either.
Right. And going back to Hannah for a second, another criticism that you hear of her as a character within the universe of the show is that she's blaming other people for what is ultimately her decision. And you see that articulated through some of the characters like Mr. Porter at the end, right? And I think that's a crucial difference between apportioning blame and the show taking the stance that other people are in general to blame for suicide, or that it's their fault if they don't see the signs or step in or change their behavior. Because Hannah is the narrator of the show, but she's not entirely reliable. We're not meant to take everything she says as gospel. The show isn't endorsing the view that Alex's list, for instance, is responsible for Hannah's suicide. It's showing that for Hannah, in that moment, in her head, it contributed to the factors that led to her suicide. It's not assigning blame in a literal sense. It's saying that these are like causal influences that all come together to form a part of a wider narrative. So, you can say that the proximate cause of Hannah's decision to kill herself is being raped by Bryce, which maybe it is, but that's possible in an environment which enables people like Bryce, where things like the Liss incident, where things like the slut shaming and the catcalling and so on are just routine parts of the school experience, and where someone like Bryce feels emboldened and enabled to be a sexual predator while knowing that no one is going to step in and stop him. So it's not saying, oh, well, everyone's equally to blame and they're all, all of them should feel guilty about it. It's just saying that the decisions that you make, whether intentionally or unintentionally, can have wider consequences.
Yeah, and I think the show does a really good job too of just like understanding that people will misunderstand it, or at least understanding that people misunderstand suicide in general. Like in the first episode, Tony's father gets angry at even Hannah getting brought up and says, you know, if you ever do that to your mother, I'll kill you. Just like right off the bat, just showing you like, yeah, people are really dumb when it comes to suicide. They don't understand it. Like people view it. Shane Powers, for instance, I remember I listened to the first episode of his radio show a few years ago that I ever listened to. And he just went on about how Kurt Cobain was just this awful, despicable human being because he abandoned his child. And I was just like, dude, like you really just don't get this. Like, don't speak on it if you don't understand it. And I think that's true for a lot of people. A lot of people I've talked to are just like, man, I just don't know why Hannah went to that party that night. That was just really dumb of her, blah, 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 blah. And I'm like, but like, you don't understand, like, being in that headspace. It's not for you to understand, like, what you would do if you were Hannah in that exact moment. It's not for you to understand whether you would have done this or not. It's to say that this character in this specific way had all of these things happen to her that seemed, some of them seem small, some of them seem major, but they all worked together and kind of built to this ultimate deep state of depression she was in, and that's why she killed herself.
Right, and someone who is that far down the rabbit hole as Hannah is in the late stages of the show, they're not going to be calmly weighing up who is most to blame, like they're in a court of law or something. It's, you know, that they're going to be lashing out at who they perceive to be to blame for their problems. And people do that all the time, and people do it in a wide array of contexts, and it's very common for people to misassign blame, but somehow that's only problematic to show in the context of suicide for some reason, which doesn't really make sense to me. And as you say, the thing that makes it so difficult is it's not just assholes or people who you would expect to not understand suicide who don't understand it. It's everyday people. It's your friends, your family. It's people who you know who are kind and understanding and who want to be supportive, but who still have these misconceptions because no one who is not being through that can fully understand it. And so you still see people say things like, oh, suicide is selfish, which just that it's just nonsense. It doesn't make any sense to say that. Like, yeah. It's not, you would never say that if you had been in that position. And by like, you are, that is not an original thought that you're contributing to the universe, right? You are not enlightening people that, oh, yeah, maybe I shouldn't kill myself because it's selfish. Like, anyone who has been suicidal has heard that a million times. And there's a reason that, you know, sometimes practically it works to guilt trip people into not doing it right now. But that doesn't solve their long-term problems. It doesn't change their mind. It doesn't change the things in their life that lead them to that place. So it's just frustrating to hear people say that. And to hear that narrative repeated by people watching the show. Like, however problematic you think the show is, I think the reaction to the show is being more problematic in the way that it exposes people's absolutely. Prejudice and people's misconceptions about it.
Yeah, and especially a step away from the suicide thing, like the people's opinion on the rape that happens in the show is more problematic than the rape in the show itself, like by far, of just the people saying, I would have stopped it, or why didn't she just get out of the hot tub, which I've seen in some places, which is just like tremendously stupid, to why wouldn't she just come out and say it to the counselor at the end, of just, you
because
know,
of people like you who are judging her for everything she says and does.
Yeah,
like, it's
exactly.
And so in the in the special that they did called Beyond the Reasons, they have in a variety of counselors and mental health professionals and so on who, and like one of the messages that they give is for someone to feel comfortable coming forward about sexual assault, it takes a safe space. It takes someone who is a comforting presence who you can feel able to open up to. And the other students certainly aren't like that. And Mr. Porter's big failure in the context of the show is he is not that person either, despite being paid to be, and despite being the one person who should be that last resort if people are in that situation.
Yeah, and you know, in that sense, he's like, he's doing and like a really bad thing, because he's obviously not very good at his job, but his job is also really important. A major criticism that I've seen is just like the absolute savaging of the Courtney character,
right.
Which is just like tremendously unfair to criticize this adopted gay person who has two gay fathers. And you know, they do a good job of like explicitly saying that in the show, of just like saying upfront, like, please don't savage this character. This is exactly what she's going through. They give her the scene where she's like, oh yeah, I'm the adopted child of two gay guys, and everyone's just gonna think that the gay rubbed off onto me, and my fathers are gonna judge me. And also saying like she's a sophomore in high school. And then like even like, you know, she has the you know, a little bit of the more like bitchy things she does in the latter part of the show, but that's all set up by Clay literally taking her to Hannah's gravesite, like you said earlier. Like she for me, it was like absolutely understandable why this girl, who not only has a tremendous amount of academic pressure put on her, but also has a tremendous amount of social pressure put on her, to why she would eventually like do the things she did and say the things she said.
Right. I also liked, incidentally, how the show subverted the typical like stereotype around Asian characters of saying, well, she does have helicopter parents, but they're her two white gay helicopter dads who are, you know, it's, I thought that was a fun little twist on it.
You know, and there were some people who pointed that out and then said, but then Zach has the absolute stereotypical helicopter Asian parent or whatever. But even on top of that, there was someone on Reddit I saw the other day who was saying like they really appreciated, because they're someone of Asian descent who's living in America, and they have American names, and people see them and they're like, oh, why is your name Josh? You look like a, you know, insert random Asian sounding name here. It was nice to have like Asian characters on the show, or Asian American characters on the show, who are named Zach Dempsey and Courtney Crimson.
Right. And I think the show does a good job of incorporating diversity without doing it in a simplistic way, or without being like overly overt about it, I suppose. Like it's seen as just a natural part of that environment.
Yeah, I mean, just like the pure breakdown of races on the show, like it's probably, you know, less than 50% white when you really break it down, isn't it? Like if you don't include the parents, it definitely has to be.
Yeah, I guess so. You have like Marcus, Zach, Courtney, I guess Montgomery kind of as well. He's Hispanic, so there's a lot of,
and then you have Sherry.
Yeah, so and Jessica, of course, as well. So yeah, it is laced throughout the show, and in a way which I think is very well done.
Yeah, and that is the thing about the show. Like, it does come in, you know, whatever you think of the broader, like the sexual assault, rape, suicide aspect of the show, it does get all at least the minor social cues right. Like, there is tons of interracial dating, and no one makes any point about it. No one makes a single joke about it. Because that's the thing a lot of TV shows and movies will do, is like they'll have an interracial couple and then they'll just mention it, almost in like a Get Out irony start sort of way of like, hey, we're not racist, look at us, ha ha ha. But, you know, the show does a good job of like there's several interracial couples and it's just not even like discussed.
I'll read through the quote from the New Zealand Film Board, because I think it's worth like dissecting in some detail, because I feel like this is very representative of the way that a lot of people see the show. So it says, the authority recognizes the series has significant merit by addressing issues highly relevant to young people, including suicide, sexual violence and bullying, and sparking conversations around difficult issues such as giving sexual consent. However, it then goes on, it says the show presents suicide fatalistically. It's not only illogical, but an unavoidable outcome of the events that follow. Suicide should not be presented to anyone as being the result of clear-headed thinking. The show ignores the relationship between suicide and the mental illness that often accompanies it. People often commit suicide because they are unwell, not simply because people have been cruel to them. So I guess a place to start there is, like, it's not unavoidable in the sense that it is Hannah's decision. She ultimately has agency. But to someone who is suicidal, that the idea of suicide does have this inevitability to it. Like, you have this idea that, well, nothing will get better. Things can only get worse. The things which are causing me to feel this way are permanent. They're not fixable. There's no clear end in sight. And suicide is the only solution that seems to have this kind of finality to it. And if you feel that you can't control the events in your life, or that there's no, like, foreseeable answer in the near future, suicide is the one thing that allows you to, like, set the terms you go out on. And it's, to someone who's in that mental space, that is, it's not comforting necessarily, but it offers a clear direction in a way that nothing else really seems to. So it is, again, it's not unavoidable in a, like, very superficial sense, but in terms of, like, the internal narrative that Hannah is going through, it does seem to be. And likewise, it's not logical in the sense that there's no, like, A plus B equals C that ends in, therefore I should commit suicide, but that's not how feelings work in general. And there is an internal logic to it for the person who's going through suicidal thoughts, because even if it's based on premises that aren't rational, like, oh, I feel worthless, or I'm a burden, or nobody loves me, or nobody would miss me if I'm gone, or whatever, given that those are your assumptions, it can seem like the only logical or clear-headed answer. And so if you want to deal with that, whether as someone who's in that situation or as a mental health professional who's counseling someone, or as a parent or a friend, you need to acknowledge that and find ways to challenge those premises or to fix the things that are leading to those assumptions, rather than just saying, oh, well, it's irrational to commit suicide, so clearly no one would do it, because no one's ever done anything irrational before, right?
Yeah. Well, and I think that kind of undersells the end of the story, right? So where, like, you know, Hannah did, like, see someone get raped in front of her, then get raped by the same person herself, only to try to reach out to her school counselor and then told that he can't do anything to help her. So, like, the mindset of that someone would be thinking logically after that is just kind of, like, kind of degrading to the Hannah character, of just, like, of, like, is it really that hard to think that someone that emotionally rattled is going to think irrationally? So just the thought that Hannah was portrayed as this completely logical character, I kind of disagree with that.
Yeah, it's the situation in life in which you are least likely to act rationally, and also it is rational in the context that person is seeing it in. And for people to ignore both of those factors at the same time is just kind of mind-blowing to me. And but maybe that's a failure of empathy on my part, that I can't get into their heads, but yeah, that's just how it seems. And it's true, certainly, that depression is an underlying factor in the majority of suicide cases. But I think there are signs within the show of Hannah being depressed. So in the book, and this is actually one of the differences between the show and the book, she gives away her bike, and Clay recognizes from this handout that they were given as a sign of, well, people give away their possessions, but that's a typical sign that you often see. And then just certain quotes that you hear throughout the show, like, one of them is, it feels like nothing, like a deep, endless, always blank nothing. Or, I just feel empty. I don't care anymore about anything. Like, those are, like, typical quotes from people who are depressed. If you showed those to a mental health professional, they would say, okay, you're depressed. This is what you need to do next. So the signs are there. And it doesn't point to them with this flashing neon light that says Hannah is depressed. And Hannah doesn't explicitly say, I'm depressed, because people who are depressed often don't have the conceptual vocabulary to articulate that. And if you're... Because depression has its own stigma around it, and it's not often discussed in a school setting. So if you're 17 years old, you don't necessarily know what depression means, even if you're going through it at the time. So, like, the show does engage with those topics, just not in a very dumbed-down way. And likewise with Alex. Like, Alex portrays typical depressive behavior, and that's... We can assume that when he commits suicide himself, he is also experiencing depressive thoughts. So... the show doesn't skirt around that. It just doesn't make it central in the way that people seem to insist on it being.
Yeah, well, and two things just on the inevitability aspect that they're trying to say the show portrays. It's just like, A, you know, we see Skye get at least a somewhat happy ending at the point, at the end of the show. So, you know, that is obviously, they're not saying that it's inevitable that she'll kill herself, because... She you know, she's at least, she's definitely shown suicidal tendencies just in her behavior. And then when, you know, we see her wrist at that certain point in the show, she's definitely someone who's portraying suicidal behavior. And then it seems like by the end of it, she's lifted out of it. So that, that's definitely not portraying her to be inevitably someone that's going to commit suicide. And then there is like the whole conspiracy theory, and it's actually the way that I viewed the show on the first time around, and I was only convinced by reading Reddit posts. It's just like Tyler is going around at the end of the show collecting guns.
Yeah.
And Alex was shot in the head. And so a lot of people are saying like, well, actually this is Tyler just going and he's going to take everybody out. And Alex just so happened to be the first one, which at the time just seemed from the images of the guns and just how little sense it made that Tyler would be buying guns. That's just kind of like the conclusion that I came to.
I saw that theory as well. Although you do see when he's like stockpiling his ammunition or whatever, you see this flashback to when, I think it was Monty who was bullying Tyler, and Alex stepped in to tell him to back off. And then you see Tyler take Alex's picture down from the, like, he has them all hung up on the string, and he takes Alex's picture down, which makes me think that he's the one who gets spared, and he's targeting all the others. But then, of course, the only guy who gets spared is the one who kills himself, because, of course, it has to be.
Yeah, well, the fatalism of the show leads you to that point, yeah, but.
And that's I've seen that brought up as people speculating that's material for a possible second season. Which if we want to detour into that quickly, that's, I don't know how I feel about that, because I think the book itself is very, very short, very self-contained, and I think the show in general did a good job of expanding that universe to a point. But when you depart from the source material to that degree and you just go off and do your own thing, there's a lot more room to experiment, but also a lot more room to mess up. And I worry that we could be doing part two of this podcast in a year saying, oh, the way they handled school shootings was just completely irresponsible and terrible. So yeah, I'm not sure how I feel about that.
Yeah, well, I think it's important to point out that if they were to do a second season of this show, it would be almost nothing like the first season. Like, obviously the format would be different, but you wouldn't imagine there would be many flashbacks at all. There's not really a way to incorporate Hannah in it whatsoever, so you lose your main character almost right off the bat, other than like maybe one or two flashbacks during the point of the show. And I think that's almost setting it up for failure in its own right, because people, if they do a second season, people are going to come to it wanting a lot of the same things that happened in the first season, and they're just not going to get that. They're not going to get the Hannah commentary and the narration, which is a pretty integral part of the show. And so I think, you know, I'm not totally against the second season. They're obviously going to be walking on eggshells, and they're going to be a bunch of people who are going to be, you know, looking at it with a magnifying glass, just the savage in general, but just the people that your expectations going into it, there's almost no way to meet the expectations of the second season unless they just blow you away in some tremendous, like, leftover season two style thing where they just completely and radically reshape the show, but it's so good that you don't care.
Yeah, the show has lost its natural focus now, and so for season two, you would have to contrive some big event or some new character to build everything around. And there's a big risk that if you get off on the wrong foot with that, then that just derails the entire second season, and it starts off on the wrong tone. So I would worry about that. However, I feel like they left it open-ended enough that if this is it, if this is the end of the show, then they have wrapped up most of the loose ends, and you can feel satisfied with the ending. The actual ending itself of them riding away in Tony's car was a little bit twee, I thought, but I can handle it.
Yeah.
It's fine.
Well, and it's pretty obvious that the showrunners definitely want a second season, right?
Well, I imagine the advertisers or the network executives probably want a second season for sure. Who knows what the producers think, but I think they see this as an overwhelming success. And so given that, you almost always want to do a second season, even if the things that made it such a success aren't really in play anymore.
Yeah, I guess just to try it out. And, you know, you look at Netflix, a company that gave Marco Polo two seasons, to think that they wouldn't give 13 Reasons Why two seasons is kind of absurd, even despite the fact that they would have to radically reshape what it did. And I think one of the commentaries made on why there absolutely shouldn't be a second season is that there's almost no way to handle the Bryce situation that is going to be socially acceptable other than him immediately being arrested and tried. And there not being much drama with that situation, because any depiction of any like drama with his prosecution is that is one place where I'll stand up and say, like, that will be definitely bad if a lot of girls go out there and see that this guy has like even a slight chance to get off of his rape conviction. Like, if they do a season two, they either need to have Bryce die in the first episode or have him be prosecuted and switch it off the show immediately.
And that's where I think that style of criticism would actually have a lot more merit. So it would almost be more faithful to real life if Bryce gets away with it, because like statistically most rapists get away with it, and often people are too scared to come forward, or they don't want to go to trial, or they're scared about what this is going to do to their reputation when this all comes out. So if you want to give a fully like educational perspective on sexual assault, it would almost be better for the show if Bryce just gets off scot-free. But as you say, like that can't happen for the show to exist in that universe.
No, I mean, that would just be detrimental. And I think they have done a good job of like, to where initially they say like, there is the part where Hannah goes and, tries to tell her counselor, and you know, he's obviously like responds to it in one of the worst ways possible, other than just outright telling her it was her fault or something like that. But you know, they do a good job of saying like all of these people, or at least Clay in his own right, and then Alex is standing up. People do respond and say like, you raped her. I'm going to go out of my way to make sure that you were convicted, like getting you on tape saying that you did it.
Yeah, so
like there is someone out there fighting for you, I guess.
Yeah. Well, one thing that happened in the translation from the book to the show is, so in the book you hear Hannah's perspective and you hear Clay's reaction to that, but you never see Clay really interacting with any other characters. You never see the backstory for those characters. So Hannah's parents, for instance, are basically non-entities in the book. They just don't really exist. Whereas in the show, obviously they're fairly central figures. So I think in general, the show did a good job of incorporating that and really fleshing it out and giving everyone their own background. But at the same time, I think one thing that got lost is the sense of perspective when it came to the other students. So when we see like Courtney and Justin and all of these people who clearly don't like each other that much and who were only brought together by their interest in not being implicated in the tapes, like coming together to defend Bryce and almost enforce this code of silence against Cody, like Clay. Like Justin is threatening to kill Clay at one point. Like it feels like it's escalated too far to be realistic anymore and for you to have any sympathy for those characters. Like so for Courtney, for instance, like it would be fine if Courtney was this flawed and unlikable but ultimately understandable character. But when she's like getting in on this criminal conspiracy to keep Clay from talking to the police, like that feels like it's gone a bit too far.
That, and honestly, like it made me sound like a bad person. Just the scenes where Justin is just openly advocating for just murdering Clay is probably one of my favorite things of the show. Just like how absurd and like it does not fit whatsoever. You're just advocating for outright killing this guy.
Right, and you don't believe that someone like Justin would do it. Like, clearly he's a dick. He has no problems with intimidating people, beating them up. He's not going to kill someone. Let's be real about this.
he like, you know, he stole Clay's bike and then felt bad and gave it back to him, you know. He's not going to murder someone.
But more generally, like, so I think getting to see, for instance, how Hannah's parents are reacting to the whole situation, or their lawsuit with the school, where now the principal, who comes across as this very unlikable figure, but ultimately his role is to defend the interests of the school, and that's what he's doing. So you get to see how all of these wider factors and consequences from Hannah's suicide play out. It's not just she died and her friends and family feel sad, but that's the end of it. It's everyone has to react to this in their own way, even if they themselves were not close to Hannah, didn't know her, or didn't really care anything about her.
Yeah, and just aside from that, Hannah's mom is probably like my favorite performance of the show.
Yeah.
And obviously, you know, she was set up with a role that was going to allow her to do that. Like, you know, Courtney never had a shot to get the best performance on the show. I find myself savaging Courtney on my own right on this. This is unfair. But
see, you are part of the problem, Cody. This is... you're encouraging these problematic narratives.
Damn it. Okay. I'm gonna create a Courtney Stan account and just go and try and undo all of the bad that's going to her as a way to make up for it.
Perfect.
But yeah, the way that you see the parents react is honestly, it's really devastating. Because you hear, when you hear someone commit suicide, for instance, at Georgia State last semester, there was a kid during finals week that actually climbed to, or he went into the teacher's office building. He went to the top floor and he jumped out of a window and just, he committed suicide and fell like, and the way Georgia State set up is like, it's just in the middle of a city. And so, you know, there's just all these, you know, hundreds of people that probably saw this, and everyone was talking about how it was a traumatic experience for them and how they witnessed it. I even found myself doing it because I was like, you know, I saw, I was walking back from my class. I saw a bunch of police sirens and, or not, I didn't see sirens. I saw a bunch of police lights and heard sirens and whatnot. And then I look over, I see a giant, a window open in the middle of it. And the windows in this building are fixed. And then you look down at the pavement and then there's just, you know, a tarp with a, obviously with a body underneath it. And, you know, I found myself talking about how that affected me, and I had, you know, almost minimal anything to do with it. And, you know, as bad as it may make me seem, like, I really didn't think once about, like, how that kid's parents felt, which is just, like, something real that every time someone commits suicide, there are people out there that love them that are affected by it. And I think that the show does do a good job of just, like, capturing everyone's perspective of how it affected them, or, you know, and how it didn't affect them, like you said with the two girls at the beginning, of just like they want to pretend like it affected them, but really they're just doing it for attention and Instagram followers or whatever.
Yeah, this is so. I wish there was a show out there that gave like a full and realistic portrayal of like the full consequences of what happens when someone commits suicide. This is not that show, but it doesn't try to be. And I think if you told someone that this is a teen drama produced by Selena Gomez, they would not come in with that expectation. but given all of that, I think the show does a remarkably good job of it. And, you know, there are criticisms to be made both from a TV standpoint and from a sociological standpoint. But ultimately, I think a lot of those are unfair. And there is a dialogue to be had about the show, and I'm glad that people are at least talking about it. But I think a lot of the comments that I see made are making those same problems that they try to identify in the show and are projecting onto the show. And I think ultimately the show does stand up well to that kind of criticism.
Yeah. And, you know, something that I learned in sociology was just like, we do just so many, like such a large number of things every day that is undeniably bad for society. Like, anytime that you pass even a homeless person and you have an extra dollar in your pocket and you're just like, well, I'm not going to give it to him, whatever. Like that's probably a bad thing to do. Like that guy, you know, despite whatever problems he may have, you know, he looks hungry. Like it probably would be good to give him a dollar. But like the problem with sitting there and calling yourself a bad person over that is like, we are just going to naturally do so many things that are harmful to society every single day. How we can counteract that and not be considered bad people is by trying to do better to contribute more than you take away or deter. And so I think even in the sociological criticisms of the show, they're kind of forgetting a basic sociological principle of just like, not everyone's perfect and neither is this show, but let's try to see if like, could it have possibly done more good than it did bad?
Yeah, I think those demands for the show to be flawless and unproblematic and to handle everything in the right way, even though people disagree about what the right way is, again, I think those are uniquely heaped upon this show in a way that they aren't with more or rather less controversial topics, which it seems perverse almost that you think there would be somewhat more leeway when discussing a topic like suicide that is so contentious and so difficult to understand, but instead it's like there's almost like a more rigid view of what the show has to be if it's trying to do that.
Yeah, and you know, a lot of that I think has to do with kind of with the Netflix model of people were able to hear others' perspectives of the entire show. And, you know, if you came away with a negative depiction of the way they showed suicide, then you were, you know, you're probably going to write a bad review of the show. And then so other people see that others have written a bad review about the show, and they just go in with a negative perspective, and they want to think that every single thing about the show is bad because I read this one review of this person I respect, and they said it was bad. And so, you know, we're kind of, in a weird way, just doing the opposite of what the show wants us to do. And its most basic thing it's trying to tell us is just, like, give people a chance, don't be mean to them, don't be rude, and then you're getting this root perspective coming into the show, and you're just like trashing everything.
Yeah, and it's a classic teen drama message of be kind to people, be nice, don't be a dick. But it's very easy to think that and then not actually follow through in any meaningful way. And it might take a graphic depiction of these difficult issues to actually force people to engage with it and for that message to stick long term.
Yeah, and I think in a lot of ways the realism of the show and the way that it like has things that actually do happen in high school, it's not like, you know, another show that tries to do something similar to what you're saying of just like the basic teen drama is like Pretty Little Liars maybe, but Pretty Little Liars is pretty much absurd that just like no matter what, they're always going to have just some random evil person just doing bad things to them for no reason. And it's hard for a teen to relate to a show like that. Whereas this show is just like, oh yeah, I had a crush on a girl I worked with one time. And oh yeah, I saw one of those lists where they were talking about who had the best ass and who was the prettiest. And oh yeah, I stopped being friends with someone because I started dating one of our other friends, and maybe giving you a perspective in like a super realistic way of, and in a really drastic way, like you were talking about with suicide, of just like, maybe this is like one of the only ways to get across two teens of like, hey, don't be a dick to people.
Yeah, and I think there are lots of people out there who saw parts of their own history in Clay or in some of the other characters, or they remember hating the Justin figure or the Monty figure from their own school. And it's, I think it is relatable in a lot of ways, even though life as a teen in high school has probably changed a lot since the time that they were there. And I think that's one thing that the show does convey well, is how like bullying has always been an issue, but now that you have cyberbullying, and if one person makes some social faux pas, it's now the whole school knows about it within 10 minutes. Like, that adds this whole new dimension to it that I think the show conveyed quite well.
Yeah, and also the idea of you got to hold your friends accountable for some of the things they do too. Like, if Justin were to ever have held Bryce accountable for one of the things he did, then it probably never would have resulted in him being a serial rapist. Like, if he stops him at the point where he sends the picture and just stands up and say, hey, dude, what the hell are you doing? Not only does that make Hannah feel a lot better because she thought that Justin was the one that did it, it also, in some sense of when your best friend is questioning your morality, you probably don't go even further down that road and, start sexually harassing / raping women.
And I wonder if that explains some of the more visceral reactions against Hannah, because when the central theme of the show is there are so many guys in this school who just don't understand consent, don't understand or respect boundaries, and then the one time that she pushes away Clay is when it feels like he is respecting her boundaries and she's mad at him for that. Like, that's the impression that you get at first glance, and that seems like go against the message of the show. But equally, like, she is confused and scared, and she's in this weird mental place that no one ever should have to go to, where like she's not thinking about the consistency of her actions or what she's saying or doing, and that's, she's just responding authentically the way that she feels at the time. And it's, you may think it makes her less likable or whatever, but you can't criticize that as a character choice.
Yeah, and I mean, that goes right back to the point of people just want Hannah to be this, because she's the main character, they just want her to be just like this moral god of someone who's never going to mess up. And that's just not, and maybe not even, like, I'm not even saying she messed up in what she did with Clay, but just this, she's going to treat exactly everyone how they deserve to be treated in any one instance. Like, even me personally, like, you know, I've had situations with girls where they did something that seemed unfair based on like how I had treated them. But then, like, I take a step back, I look at their circumstance, and I'm like, oh, so it actually absolutely makes sense why they're acting the way they are, if I can take someone's perspective into it even for 1 second.
That's a kind of like second level thinking that you need to have, which is so hard to have when you're 17 years old and in this weird socially pressured environment, right? Yeah, like, Hannah is not perfect. She's not designed to be perfect. She's not, you're not meant to think that she's perfect, and that doesn't change the message one iota.
No, absolutely not. If anything, it emphasizes the message of we're not all perfect, but we should try to be better to those people around us still, because not everyone's perfect. People are going to mess up. It's going to affect other people, and other people's imperfections are leading to them being upset, and so you need to try and be as nice to other people as much as you can. That's the whole point of the show. And, you know, like you said, that takes like a place of second level thinking that not a lot of people are arriving to if they're just going in wanting to hit the show off the bat.
Right. And I think back to how I was when I was that age, and I'd like to think I've changed a lot since then, but I still have a lot of blind spots. Like I still have a lot of situations where I look back on it the next day, or like I remember it 2 years later randomly, and it's like, yeah, I really fucked up there, didn't I? Like it's you never get over that, but I think you just have to respond as maturely as you can in the moment, and then just like try and learn the lessons that you can learn from that going forward.
Yeah, I mean, and for anyone who thinks that they are not like that,
you are like that. Especially if you think you're not like that, you are like that. Let me tell you.
Yeah, if you think that you don't regret anything you've ever done, please, if you have a Twitter account, go download the TimeHop app. Look every day at the dumb stuff that you tweeted on this day, however many years ago. You will go back into the app and you will delete it because you realize that you were an idiot that day and you regret your decision.
Oh, that Facebook like on your day on this day feature is the bane of my existence, because every day I feel compelled to click and just see what stupid thing like 16-year-old me posted 8 years ago, and I've been like deleting it methodically, so this time next year there will be no record of past me. But even so, it's like I hope I'm not that person anymore in a lot of ways.
Oh, absolutely. And it's also important to realize in real time, like, I'm not going to be perfect. I'm going to probably make a mistake today. Every time that I tweet now, I just automatically assume that, like, 3 years down the road, I'm probably going to think I'm an idiot.
Every tweet I make is a mistake. And I've tweeted like 4,500 times, and that's a lot of mistakes to make over the course of your life. So.
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, the worst is when you've had like a debate with someone on Twitter and there's like 15 to 20 tweets of just things that you fundamentally disagree with, and you want to like go back and argue with yourself at 15 years old or however.
Okay, so that was a pretty long and deep and heavy conversation. I think that covers pretty much everything that we wanted to cover. Feel free to jump in, could you have anything? But I think that's going to do it. So if you want to be found, if people want to find you on social media and hurl abuse at you, where can they find you?
Like we just talked about, I have a Twitter account. It's at Cody Hates Wheels, which is a dumb inside joke that no one will ever get, and it's not worth explaining. Unless you want to see a lot of political tweets, I probably wouldn't follow me there. I don't tweet about Survivor or anything that your viewers would probably be interested in too much, because I don't have many friends that watch Survivor. If you want to add me on Snapchat, that's probably the better one, because I'm a film major and I try to at least capture interesting things on my Snapchat. That's also Cody H. Wheels. But, you know, even if you don't want to follow me on Twitter, I would obviously like to hear if you disagree with anything I've said, because I like to have an open mind about any of my positions.
I would only like to hear if you agree with what I said. Yeah, feel free to reach out anyway if you like. I'm not going to turn you down.
Well, that's apparent. I went and looked at your guys' reviews on iTunes. You only have 5-star reviews, so that seems to be exactly what people are doing. Yeah, I think there's like 50 5-star reviews, and that's all there is.
Well, props to those guys, I guess.
Well, surely after this discussion, there'll be 50 1-star reviews to counteract.
Oh, there'll be a lot of people in my mentions, I'm betting. If they make it like an hour and 45 into this, yeah. But we'll see. I can weather the storm. I'll be fine. But yeah, Cody, thank you so much for coming on. I know this was kind of short notice, and but I think people, there's so much excitement around the show that I think people want to hear about it, and there's not much actual content about it. There are all of these pieces, all of these articles and stuff, but it's rare that you see people just sitting down and having a conversation about the show, except via like 140 character increments on Twitter. So yeah, thank you for coming on. I think this was, I enjoyed it a lot, and I hope people will find it interesting.
Oh, for sure.
And of course, thank you to all of you out there for listening still. If you have any feedback, then I'm at DomHRV on Twitter. You can email us domcolin@gmail.com. We'll obviously be back with our regular Survivor coverage. If there are any other shows that you want us to talk about, or you would like to volunteer yourself to come on and talk about with us, then by all means, get in touch through those methods. But yeah, it's going to do it. So thank you to Cody. Thank you all for listening, and we will see you next time.